Blue 80, set up. And I snap the ball, and there's just this horrific splash.
It's time to join the stink tank.
You're right, Jets fans. That's the one right there in the middle.
And I'm like, I'm just going to go. And I completely emptied my bladder on the bench.
Mark Schlereth.
This stinks.
Every Tuesday with Wyman and Bob.
We look forward to it every single week. You know him, you love him, and he is now with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Mark Schlereth is here. Mark, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. Hey, before we get to all the football and everything that we want to throw your way, we want to obviously send our most sincere condolences and thoughts to you and your family on the passing of your mother. I thought the video that you put out on Twitter was incredibly well done and incredibly heartfelt and sincere and genuine, and just, you know, don't want to dwell on it. I'm sure it's not something you want to dwell on, but just wanted to make sure you knew we were thinking of you, man.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, she's a great woman. And anyhow, I do appreciate the condolences and all the people that reached out, hundreds of them, and the great folks at Fox who have made this, a tough time as easy as they possibly could on me. So lots of support out there. So thank you. I appreciate the love.
Yeah, man, that was so heartfelt and everything. And Bob's always asked me, did you see this from Mark? Did you know he was going to be on TV? Did you know he was this? I'm like, yeah, man.
I ask a lot of questions.
No, I knew when you were a teammate. What a thoughtful guy you are. So yeah, same as Bob said, really well done, buddy.
Oh, I appreciate that, Dave. Thank you so much, guys.
Well, and again, for people that want to see it, the video's up there on Twitter. I retweeted it at Bob Stelton. It's really well done. Okay, let's move on to happier thoughts. Or I guess it's not that happy. The Seahawks lost, Mark, so we're not that happy about it. But I'm trying to figure out how to approach this, and I think I need to be more like Dave and some of the others in readjusting my expectations of the Seahawks team. I was thinking they'd be an 11-win team or so coming into this season, and they're certainly not going to be that, I don't think, especially with a backup quarterback in there. So I kind of walked away from this game going, yeah, the defense was better, and yeah, this guy played well, that guy played well, but what does it matter? They're still 2-4. They lost. I tend to think those are things you say about a young, growing team, a team that's starting to come together and trying to find their way. This is a team whose Super Bowl window is open right now. How do you view this Seahawks team? Do you take solace in some of the things they did well, or do you bottom line it and say, well, it's a loss?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously when you're 2-4 in that division with what the Cardinals are doing, what the Rams are doing right now, that's a daunting task. So it makes it tough. There's no question, but you do take away some things. I mean, I've always felt like, you know, Pete Carroll wants to go back to the 90s football. And after that first half, it was a mess. You saw that in the second half. You saw the way they ran the ball. And I'll tell you this, you know, when you get Russell Wilson back, whenever he does come back, when he gets out of the ghost huddle, and starts getting into a real huddle, which will be fun. You know, holy nerd guy.
You ever seen that before?
Holy nerd guy.
I've never seen that before.
No, never seen that before. But I kid around, but shoot, I actually before a Super Bowl, like, this is how crazy, like I'm a kindred spirit with Russ, and I'm just a big nerd. I actually moved my furniture in my room because the Super Bowl, you know, kicks off at, I don't know what time it kicks off. It's late, and we're on the East Coast playing in Miami, and I moved the bed up against the wall. I moved some couches and stuff out of the way, and I actually went through the game plan. I did all my pass sets and took off like 18, 19 handoff and 14, 15, you know, cut back and all this stuff. And so I'm just as nerdy as that guy. But, you know, when he comes back, yeah, you know, I think part of this whole thing is the way they ran the ball in that second half, the adjustment that they made, like that could be a real benefit to Russ not putting so much pressure on him. You know, it's really interesting when, you know, you talk to coaches and stuff, the importance of taking 12 to 15 mental reps off your quarterback. You know, they have so much on their plate at all times. And when you're basically saying, hey, let's let that guy go out there and run the offense from the line of scrimmage, that's great and that's awesome. But there's a lot of mental anguish that goes with that, trying to figure out what's the best play, where we're going to go, how we're going to adjust. You know, we're going to change the protection. Who's my best matchup? You know, are they playing zone? Are they in man-to-man? What are they playing? And if I can take 10 to 15 plays off that quarterback's plate where he just either has to hand it off or he has a simple play action boot keep out the back end. It just takes, you know, it's one of those, it's 10 or 12 or 13 or whatever it is plays where the quarterback can actually exhale. And I think that that's an important aspect to an offense that really, because they rely so heavily on Russ to do his thing, that they could take a lot of pressure off of him. So just building something that I think really helps him when they get back, and hopefully they haven't gotten to a point where they can't make a playoff push. And what that does from a complementary standpoint to your defense, when you run the ball like that, it's amazing how much fresher your defense can play on a, you know, on a snap to snap basis. So I think there's some good things you take away from that. You just hope you don't get to the point where by the time he gets back, you're out of it.
You know, it's what's interesting, Mark, is that Steve Largent used to do that on Fridays after the last, you know, practice of the week. He would go out on the field by himself and go huddle up, run out to his spot, you know, run a pattern, simulate like he was blocking, run back to the huddle. So yeah, it's apparently the nerds that are doing it are pretty damn good, and yourself included. You won a couple of Super Bowls or so. So yeah, that I mean, that's something that I think you look at that and go, wow, that guy is really special, what he's doing. And one of the things that Pete just said, though, Mark, and really exactly what you're saying, he said, I go back to the Bill Walsh days, that you have to do everything you can to help your quarterback. And just all the things that you mentioned, you know, that, you know, you got to try to make it easy. And I remember you were saying that last year of how about just a few easy throws for Russell Wilson, and especially with Geno Smith, you know, same thing, like everything you can do to help your quarterback, because and you're pretty close to Elway and everything. I mean, all the calls and the checks and everything. I mean, it's a lot.
There is so much mental pressure on you. You know, you think about, you get a play that's called, and a lot of plays, you know, you're going to kill it with a play. And so you're sitting there and, you know, you've got to not only take in the play, but you got to get in the huddle, and you got to bark out the formation. You got to bark out the play. So you get into, you know, whatever it is, trips right, nasty, H left outside, you know, two jet branch Buffalo, can it with, 18 handoff structure, you know. And so then you walk up to the line of scrimmage and you got to check to see, hey man, are we going to run the pass play? Do we have the right look, or are we going to check it to the 18 structure play? And then you sit there and say, okay, we're going to run the pass play. Now you have to say, hey, if we're running branch, that concept with H outside, H is going to run the go. Branch is the 8-yard, you know, stick route, essentially, from the nasty split. Now, Buffalo, we've got a through route on the tight end. That's going to be my number one read. We got a pick curl, which is the number two receiver on the three-man side. And that guy's really trying to take coverage off for the now route coming underneath, which is just basically a drive, shallow cross, if you will, from the outside. And I've got to assimilate all that stuff and understand where each route combination, each guy is supposed to be. Now, what defense are they in? I mean, there is so much. I don't know how they do it. I really don't. There is so much on the plate of the quarterback on a, you know, on a play-to-play basis, that I do think it's really important to give that guy, you know, a mental break during the course of any given drive. And especially at the end of a game when, you know, all of a sudden the pressure's on and all these games seem to come down to a one score game. You know, when that happens to you, now all of a sudden you're going to rely on him. So if you've given him some plays off during the course of that time, hopefully he's going to perform a little bit better when his, you know, number is called to be the guy.
That goes right into what I was going to ask you next, and that is about the backup quarterback spot. You know, there are people out here that, you know, fans hitting you on Twitter or the text, hey, they got to bring in Cam Newton. Why don't they bring in Cam? Why don't they bring in Kaepernick? Why don't they bring in – think of any quarterback that they're familiar with that's not with a team right now, and they're saying bring them in. The idea that they're going to come in and somehow be more effective out of the gate with an offense they're not familiar with, learning all that terminology, all the rules, all that stuff – by the time Russ gets back is maybe when they start to get comfortable with it. It doesn't make a lot of sense considering the timing. Do you agree with that, or do you think, hey, there are better players out there, you should go get the guy that has more talent, and they'll be able to pick this offense up?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because I think the easiest thing in the world for a fan to see is talent, right? I can see that you're big. I can see that you can run fast. I can see all that stuff. You know, talent oftentimes is wasted on talented people. I want guys that can play and guys that are smart and guys that are effective. And I don't remember the last time that Cam Newton really played well. It certainly hasn't been since maybe that shoulder injury in 2018.
Actually, last year here.
Against the Seahawks.
He threw against our defense, Mark, for 400 yards, actually.
Yeah. Okay, well.
Dave and I are sitting there looking at each other going, we remember.
Yeah, all of the fans here in Seattle were ready to jump all over that one. Sorry, buddy.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the education. So he had one really good game against a super crappy defense.
There you go.
No, I mean, the bottom line, though, is he has been woefully inconsistent since 2018 with all the injuries. And, you know, and that's what happens to you. I just keep looking at, you know, the structure, the understanding of the offense. You bring in another guy that, you know, really hasn't played very well since he lost some of his physical attributes. And I've never thought he was very accurate, you know, on a consistent basis, very accurate, pretty good deep ball thrower, but the intermediate route stuff, some of the underneath route stuff has never been on time or very accurate with that stuff. So again, I think that's the magic elixir that everybody thinks that Cam is. I just don't think that he's that anymore. So, you know, when you can use your body and you can create an offense where he's going to run it on design runs 8 to 10 times a game, and you're going to set up the play action stuff off of that, that's probably a different story. But you can't ask him to do that anymore. I just don't think his body will hold up doing that. So I just don't think that's a viable option.
Hey, Mark, you did the Ram Giant game in New York, and man, it's very discouraging for, you know, the NFC West fans and the Seahawks. They just seem to just march up and down the field. And then, you know, you see Cooper Kupp and his connection with Matthew Stafford. There's kind of a side of me that's sort of happy for Matthew Stafford just because he's always been kind of an interesting topic. Like, he's a good quarterback. Is he, you know, a franchise quarterback? And the way that, I mean, that guy's, he's got to be the happiest guy in the NFL right now.
He does. I talked to him about it, not to disparage Detroit, but he had a big smile on his face, you know, getting to run that offense in Los Angeles. And I think, it's funny, at my open, which, you know, you do an open before the game, and Adam Amin is my co-host, and, you know, he's my play-by-play guy. And I said, hey, man, you remember in the open, I said, you remember the band Styx? And then I said, I thought to myself, right when I said, I go, of course you don't remember that. You were 12 years old during the Styx, you know. So, you know, but it's this thought of the grand illusion. They're in 11 personnel, three wide receiver sets, 98% of the time. But they run a lot of 12 personnel type plays and a lot of 21 type personnel plays out of that because Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods aren't afraid. I mean, they are full-time football players, and they'll hit you in the mouth, and they'll block defensive ends, and they just don't care. You know, they'll insert and take on a Sam linebacker. It doesn't matter to them. So they do a great job with that stuff. So it's this illusion, this grand illusion of being this big spread offense and really just trying to cram it down your throat with the wide and tight zone stuff. And that's really what they do best, and they're great at it. And then all the play action stuff that sets up off of that. Cooper Kupp is like a quarterback playing wide receiver, super smart, really understands, you know, as Matthew Stafford told me, he sees the game through a quarterback's eyes. He's like playing with another quarterback out there, except he plays receiver. And they're so unselfish. And I'm really happy. I've always thought that Matthew Stafford was an elite level quarterback. He just played in a really crappy situation. Now they run the ball. They set up the play action stuff for him. And he is, you know, he's got to be having an absolute blast. And they're a really good football team. And then, you know, you couple that with three superstar kind of type players on the other side of the ball. And Aaron Donald does not have to have one stat Not one stat in the stat line, and he completely wrecks games. I think he had a sack or a sack and a half and a tackle for loss, you know, but pretty quieter than that. And he almost completely destroyed every single play that the Giants tried to run. He was in the backfield, splitting double teams, you know, pass rushing on run blocks. And he's one of one in this league, and he's special to watch.
Hey, let me bring you back to the Hawks for a moment and ask you about a guy that is taking a lot of heat this year, and a lot of it just is based on the contract he just signed, and that's Jamal Adams. They used him a little different in this game, and I don't know how much you've broken down Seahawks film through this part of the season, but they were blitzing him a lot more, much like they did last year. Up until this game, I think they were using him half as much in the blitz and more of a traditional safety, and he was on his way to his best game of the year, and then the knock on him is he doesn't have great ball skills. He's not a good coverage guy. He gets hit right in the face with a ball he clearly didn't see. He didn't even raise his hands to offer at it, which leads to the legend, you know, adds to the legend of a guy who's just not good with ball skills. What do you see when you watch him? Does he look like a guy who needs to stand in front of a jugs gun and just work on his hands? Is there something he could do to rectify that, or do you look at it as, hey, that's not his strength, let's emphasize his strengths and have him rush the passer?
Yeah, I see him as an in-the-box safety. When you get him in coverage, whether he's in zone or the deep safety or whether he's in man-to-man, I just don't think that's his strong suit. I don't think he's fluid in that part of the game. And I think, frankly, teams like to try to attack him if he's in coverage. That's where they want to throw it. Now, when he's down in the box, he's a problem. He's one of those dudes you got to find that guy, and you got to have a plan to contend with him. So, you know, basically, the way I see teams kind of operating is if he is back there, he's a guy that we'll go after. And from a coverage standpoint, because of the fact that he doesn't have great ball skills, but I don't think he has great coverage skills. I see guys running away from him on a consistent basis when he matches up to them. So I just don't think he's a great cover guy, but he is a real issue as an in-the-box player when a blitz and run and all the things that he does from that position. So, you know, the bottom line is you got to put him in those positions to win as often as possible. And to do that, you know, you've got to be great on the back end. And I think that's the biggest issue is they're not great on the back end. They haven't been great at the cornerback position. They haven't been, I think Diggs is a really good player, but I think the corners have been a question. So it's really hard to say, hey, we're just going to keep you in the box all the time if the rest of the guys can't hold up.
Yeah, Mark, you did a great job of, you know, describing all of the things that a quarterback needs to have. And if it wasn't tough enough to play quarterback, I think playing backup quarterback is probably one of the more difficult jobs. Like, you really have to concentrate, and you don't get a chance to play. I think it's disappointing as well, you know, that you have to be as prepared as the starter, and you're not going to get to play. And even here, you know, as far as the practices go here, from what we understand, Russell is a rep hog. So he wants, uh-huh. You know, he wants 90-95% of them. But, you know, when Geno came in on that Thursday night game, I was really impressed by the fact that, you know, number one, it was a 98-yard drive. But, you know, he went 5 for 5. He just seemed very ready, very professional, I think. And, you know, you look around the league, there's not a lot of good backup quarterbacks. I mean, that's a tough position. Just any experiences or stories you have of, you know, I don't even remember who. Hugh Millen was John's backup there when we were there. But as far as backup quarterbacks, any stories there? Any backup quarterbacks that stand out to you?
The guys that were prepared that would come in, and they knew what they were doing. You know, there's those guys are invaluable. And they do, you know, you're right. It is such a hard job to have to do that, you know, prepare like you're going to play and never get to play. And there's so much mentally on your plate to have to go through all that stuff. And then to be asked to come in and never get a rep and have to execute it. But, you know, as Alex Gibbs used to say all the time, and all, like, don't tell me about the pain, show me the baby. I don't, you know, I don't really care about how hard your job is, right? You've got to do that. And I was really impressed with Geno Smith, and I've been impressed with the way he's played thus far. So it is hard. I don't know about, you know, I mean, there were guys that we had as backups that you used to think, gosh, just pray to God that guy never has to play, because you know you don't have a chance if that dude is coming in. By the way, I played 1 year with Chris Miller, who was a Pro Bowl player as a starting quarterback back in the day in Atlanta. And he came in, he got to play a game. We were actually in Seattle in the Kingdome, and Chris Miller had the worst cadence that I had, like the worst cadence in the history of cadence. And, you know, offense is all rhythmic. So it's all based on how rhythmic your cadence is. And so if it's on two, you know, it's something like blue 80, ha-da! And we're all going on one. So none of us are, we never get called off sides because we're all going on, you know, way before the second hut. That's our only advantage. We're fat and sloppy and lazy, and you guys on defense are all like athletic and pretty, and you have abs and stuff. Right. And you know, we all look at you guys and go, look at your abs. Like, we're all sitting in our offensive line area with our bellies hanging up over our junk and in our shorts, you know, and then we're looking at you guys walking, prancing around the locker room with abs and, you know, muscles and other things that you're just like, wow, look at that guy.
And sometimes you're looking at white teeth, right? And
yeah. And so we're all jealous and envious and then, you know, so that's why we jump the snap count, because that's the only thing we have. That's it. That's all we have. And then you'd get Hugh Millen, or not Hugh Millen, but Chris Miller. Gosh.
Lots of backups. Chris,
yeah, whatever. One of the, you know, so many backups. But his cadence was so bad, he'd be like, blue 80, hot. Huh? And you just be getting your ass kicked because those guys are just teeing off on the ball. And you're like, dude, for the love of Pete, you know what? Figure it out. Yeah, he was horrible. not a horrible quarterback. He just had a horrible cadence.
Bad cadence.
If you're listening, Chris, I think he lives in Oregon right now. He may be listening to you guys. Chris, I like you a lot. You're my friend. But you had a horrible cadence.
He's a big fan of the show, certainly. Hey, we're up against the break, but I did want to ask you just for a quick thought on something that's a big story out here at the college level. Obviously, Washington State and their coach, Nick Rolovich, parted ways over the vaccine mandate that exists in this state. There's a lot of people that support him, a lot that are ripping him, saying, you know, you ask players and kids to sacrifice and you don't do it. And my biggest complaint is that he never said anything. His communication on this whole thing, I thought, was really, really awful. So just from the outside, what is your position on that? Is there a respect for him standing up for what he believes in, or do you feel like this was a mistake on his part?
Well, I mean, having a mom that just passed away from COVID a couple of days ago, I am one of those guys that wants to get vaccinated and wants to protect others because, you know, I know what it meant. I mean, my mom had multiple myeloma, so she had a blood cancer, and she couldn't afford to get COVID, and she got it. And, you know, a week and a half later, she was dead. So that is, you know, we ask, you know, the thing that makes great football teams, and Dave will tell you, is your willingness to sacrifice for one another, your willingness to play for one another, your willingness to put others ahead of yourself. And that's what makes incredible teams. And listen, you get to do what you want, but the bottom line, there are consequences, you know? And, I respect the fact that there's a guy that, you know, is going to suffer the consequences, but you know, I'm just one that wants to try to sacrifice, and that's playing offensive line, sacrifice for the good of the team. And anyhow, that's just kind of my own personal philosophies, and you know, I'm not trying to bag on anybody, but I also know the severity of it.
Yeah, well put, man. And again, we really appreciate you joining us today. I know, again, it is just an awful time you're going through, and our thoughts and condolences and everything with you. We appreciate it very much.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. Always fun talking to you.
We'll talk to you next week. There
Thanks,
he is.
Buddy.
Mark Schlereth with us every week. Always a conversation we look forward to, and really appreciate him joining us considering what he's going through on a personal level. So good stuff from him. All right, coming up with one game under his belt. There might be some noticeable changes for Geno Smith this week. We'll tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program. Stay tuned for that conversation. You guys can also text in questions for John when we get closer. You don't need to text him in right now, but as we get closer to the top of the hour, you can text in any questions you've got for the professor, 421-3776, 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. So how different might this game plan look now? We saw Geno with a full four quarters under his belt. He got thrown into emergency action in the game that Russell got hurt. Now he had that week. He got prepared. He was the man. He's that same role again. Do they open it up? Do we see a more expansive version? I don't know that they held him back from anything. I think they called the game as they probably otherwise would for the most part. Russell doing a lot on his own. But what do you think in terms of this offense? And considering the numbers we threw out there earlier about that Saints defense, I'm wondering – Do you think they're looking at that film going, okay, boy, the running game may not be the answer this week as much as we love it? Well, of course, they're not going to abandon it, but maybe there'll be more emphasis on the pass against a team whose only weakness defensively seems to be in the air.
You know what's interesting about that is that we look at the stats, and I'll bet you there's very few players over there that have any idea where they're ranked.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The
coaches probably know. Like,
the Saints run defense. Yeah, I mean, look, you're looking at the last three games, you know? So, I mean, I think it's like that every week. I mean, look at Cam Hayward, and just think if they'd had Stephon Tuitt in Pittsburgh. I mean, Cam Hayward is just such a – he's a problem, like moving him off the line, you know? And so they're going to see the same type of thing, so – I feel like they're just going to stick to their game plan, what they want to do. I'm hoping it involves running a little bit more and maybe not starting off with a fly sweep to the tight end. I don't know. Why did that become such a big deal? Because he got negative yardage, right?
I think it just looked slow developing. He's not a slow guy, but when you compare him to the guys that usually run those plays, whether it's a Lockett or Eskridge or somebody, you know, smaller, quick guys, it looked a little – Yeah, like he was lumbering, and then obviously it didn't work.
Right, but then you know, I mean, I think that they were trying to set something up for later, maybe. But you know, still, I feel like they haven't gotten to a lot of their offense. I mean, when it was really cooking, I think a couple of times with Russ against Indy at the end of the half against Tennessee, where they were just just dicing the defense apart. You know, there were like six different guys touched the ball, and it's like an easy throw here, a run here. All of a sudden, you open the run game up and spread everybody out. And remember, Alex Collins hits it up the middle for like 26 yards. I mean, I think there's a lot of that they can still get to. It's very much a rhythm offense. So, you know, I feel like they just keep running the same offense. To me, I feel like you can just kind of pick up where Russ left off as far as executing. I think Geno's been really good. I've been very impressed with him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe I have, you know, lowered my standards, but Schlereth said he always has liked Geno and thought he did a really good job. So I mentioned earlier the throws that he can make. I just don't think you can count on him to make the Russell Wilson throws.
Right.
You can't, which that's no crime. You can't count on him to make, you know, spin out of a sack and throw a touchdown. You can't, you know, count on him to do all the things that Russell does. And also, you know, we mentioned this, a little rough throwing on the run.
Yeah.
Not great at that. But I feel like everything else, they can just continue on. He's executed. They haven't – trying to think. Think back. Is there ever a time where he – oh, my God, he looks confused.
No.
You know, or he's like late –
I wish there were just some sacks he took that I was like, oh, boy, you got to get rid of that. They were pretty damaging. But he didn't look confused. He just looked like, you know, when we've said that about Russell. Dude, throw the ball away. Why would you take that? So you say it about a lot of quarterbacks who you know, maybe it's just a belief. If I hang on one more second, this guy's going to come open here. I just one more second. But, yeah, I think he's got to have that internal clock ticking a little bit louder than it was in this game.
Yeah.
Quick thought from Pete Carroll on just how Geno did and addresses the turnover at the end of the game.
He was competing his tail off. He was calm. He was poised. He was in control. He handled everything really well and throughout the whole thing. And he was so upset that that it comes down and he loses the football right at the end there, you know. And really, you know, when you look right at it, Geno had terrible ball security as he ducked up in there. I mean, we don't let anybody run with the football like that. And he'll see it. You know, he had the ball like he's carrying, you know, a loaf of bread, like they say, you know, and he got it knocked out. They can knock it out anyway, but we don't ever, you know, want to look like that. And so, unfortunately, that got us. But he gave us a chance, you know.
Oh, that's about as blunt as I've heard Pete. And
he was kind of joking around about it.
Yeah, but he did say, yeah, it was terrible ball security. You know,
it was.
I hope the people that were ripping me yesterday for saying I put the first one, two turnovers ended games.
Yeah.
When he's been playing. The first one is hard to put on him. Tyler got locked up with the feet of a defender. He went down. Geno threw it where he was supposed to be. Okay. I don't put that on Geno. This one, I'm saying, you know.
Ball security.
I understand who T.J. Watt is. I understand that that's what the Steelers do. And knowing that that's even more of an emphasis, that ball security. Then you see here, Pete. Yeah, terrible ball security there.
Joe Sellers used to say, he looks like he's going to farmer's market carrying a loaf of bread. Yeah, I mean, to hear him say that, I mean, it's obviously something they've worked on. I mean, I don't think there's any way he saw T.J. Watt, but, you know, being aware and just tucking the ball away, you know, securely. Because, again, we saw, you know, it's something that's been emphasized. I mean, Mark didn't want to give me the whole, you know, feel sorry for the backup quarterbacks. He's like, yeah, nobody wants to hear your sad story. Yeah, you got a tough deal. Yeah. But I do think there's so many things to think about, and that was probably one of those that just slipped his mind in that moment. But also, everything's happening so fast.
Right.
I mean, you're out there trying to get everything. So I kind of gave him a break on that, but apparently Pete didn't, so his opinion's the one that matters, I guess.
All right. Coming up, Nick Rolovich is out at Washington State, as everybody's aware. So what happens to this team the rest of the season? Talk about that next with Wyman and Bob, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program, so stay tuned for that conversation. If you guys have questions for John, you can text those in, 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN. Powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Well, one of the bigger stories here locally, Dave, that is very polarizing, and you acknowledge, listen, there are people on both sides of this. Everybody's got their own opinion and feels like they're right and, you know, whatever. Everybody can make their own decision on how they feel about what's happened at Washington State, but the fact is it's happened. And it's going to be very – first of all, here's the statement from Pat Chun on his release – Rolovich's release.
Today, Nick Rolovich was formally notified by the university that he has failed to meet the requirements as stated in the state of Washington Governor Inslee's Proclamation 21-14-1 related to vaccination requirements. The noncompliance with this requirement renders him ineligible to be employed at Washington State University and therefore can no longer fulfill the duties as a head coach of our football program effective immediately.
So that was the official statement. They've got an interim coach. We'll see what they end up doing. We'll see if kids transfer. I mean, there's a lot of fallout from this. How does this impact their recruiting? Again, there's the trends. I saw, I think it was Art Thiel wrote a story about it, saying you might as well color the transfer portal crimson and gray now, assuming there will be a lot of kids that might transfer out of it. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But it's an interesting thing because I'm certain within that locker room you had kids on both sides of this. They were very passionate, maybe in support of him. Maybe there are some that were very passionate on the other side. So it's a polarizing topic. It's different. And I know you and I were talking during the break, and it is a big deal. It's a huge deal. He's the highest paid state employee in the entire state of Washington, and the state has a mandate. Now we talk about a lot of things, whether it's in this building or out in society, rules and this and that. You just go, what in the heck is that for? Why is that in place? Why would I have to adhere to this? There's a million of them I could list. I'd like to keep my job, so I won't go through them all here. But, you know, that's the choice you and I make. That's the choice I make to maintain this position. Is I'm like, yeah, I don't agree with this, but, you know, in order to make a living, that's what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And if it crosses a line with me personally, where I feel like, you know what, I just can't live with myself if I go against my beliefs or my morals or whatever it's challenging within me.
Yeah.
Then I'll make that decision. That'll be up to me. You know, the company has the right to lay out the rules as they see fit. And here's, all right, in order to maintain this position, here are the requirements you've got to meet. If you don't agree, all right, you go your way, we'll go ours. And that's how it goes.
So I guess there's 24 states that have, so there are other places that he can coach. But what about going and recruiting? You know, we were talking about that earlier. I know LA and, you know, you can't go into the schools and things like that. So yeah, I just think to a lot of people, it's a really big deal. It's more than just a rule that you have to comply with. It's, you feel like, and I think for most people, that they feel like they're being controlled, and they don't want to be controlled by government. And that's kind of the sticking point there. And I'm not sure if his is religious or anything. You mentioned this, and you know, I would say I agree with you. Maybe unless he is, you know, communicated about this more and we just haven't gotten a chance to hear it. But, you know, just I would like to at least know what the details are and things like that. And then I wonder what's going to go on with the kids. You know, are they, I wonder how many of them, you know, maybe I could see anything from everybody wanting to transfer out to a bunch of kids sort of not wanting to play in solidarity, you know, with the coach. You know, who knows? Who knows?
Or maybe they rally around the interim guy.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to watch and see what happens. I guess, is he the only coach that we have that's going through this? I mean, we're one of the 24 states, I think, that have vaccine mandates.
I can't think of another coach.
Just his four assistants, but yeah, only head coach.
Well, yeah, head coach. Yeah. And here's the one thing I'll say about how this, I mean, because this isn't out of nowhere. This isn't, whoa. Where did this come from? This date has been out there for a while. Everybody going, what's going to happen? He's applying for a religious exemption, all that. On his part, if I were his PR guy, if you will, I'd say go out and make your point clear. Make your position clear. There are going to be people that are absolutely 1,000% going to agree with you, and there are going to be people that absolutely 1,000% disagree with you. But don't leave it open to interpretation, and he thinks this or he believes this. I thought that's where he really dropped the ball, just representing his position. He did not do that well at all. And he had a million opportunities, and it made me think of when, you know, Colin Kaepernick was in the league and he was making his positions clear and, you know, he's taking a knee. I thought he did a terrible job explaining himself. He did one time that I thought went really well in the locker room, and then after that, you didn't hear anything from him. Yeah. And there are so many questions as to, hey, what's behind this? Tell us what you think. And there was an opportunity for you to express your opinion in a way that others may not have heard. And maybe you change a mind. Maybe you impact somebody. Maybe somebody didn't see it that way until you explained it. And like, oh, okay, now I get it. He had an opportunity to explain why he believed what he believed. His position is that way because he didn't say anything.
Yeah,
I just thought he handled that really poorly.
Maybe it's because, you know, everybody has their canned response to this. Like you said, it's very divisive and people are, you know, going to portray him a certain way, and he knew that was going to happen. I think the other thing, too, is maybe he's just calling their bluff, not thinking
Clayton.
Of
it. John Clayton.
Why is Lefko so excited? He's so excited to hear from John. He'll be here, Lefko. He'll be here. Just wait.
Lefko's not fooling around right now. He's angry.
I think he was done listening to
somebody
you.
Out. Yeah.
He's like, Dave, I'm done.
Yeah, that happened to me yesterday. I think it's a trend.
It's the tone of your voice that triggers that sounder.
I just think the whole thing is very unfortunate that it's happening this way. So, it's like you said, very polarizing. And I think it's kind of weird. It's like certain, you know, people, I don't know if it has to do with politics or whatever, they're drawn to something that sets us apart. Like there's one side that is just like, I don't want anybody telling me what to do in that regard. And then there's the other people that are like, how can you not go, you know, get this when, you know, and I always, I'm like, where does it go from here? What's the next step? I mean, right now it's, you're losing your job, but if they're that, you know, and then same thing for the other side, you know, what's their next step. But if they're that interested in getting every single person vaccinated. Like, what's the next step after this? Because now they're taking away jobs. And then, you know, what's, I always look at things down the road. Mm-hmm. Like, where is this going to end?
Yeah.
I'm curious. It's very kind of, I don't know, you and I have kind of approached it. It's sort of fascinating to watch this whole thing play out. It's interesting. You got human nature, you know, and this is not something that we can avoid. Typically, we'd like to keep these kinds of things away from sports, but it's totally affecting sports.
Well, and unfortunately, it's become a political divide, which I don't think any medical situation should ever be. You know, people say, stop listening to politicians. I'm not taking my advice from any politician from any party. So, you know, left, right, center, whatever side you're on, you can think whatever you like. I talk to my doctor. I'll talk to the guy that's got the degree on the wall. I'm not going to be the guy without the degree saying, I know better. But tell me.
There's doctors with degrees on the other side of it.
Yeah. Listen, man, your doctor. Go to who you trust as a medical professional. I've trusted doctors my whole life. I'm not going to just all of a sudden go, yeah, I think you've got an agenda all of a sudden. But I trusted you when you cut me open 2 years ago and when you fixed my knee and when you... I mean, all of a sudden, he can't be trusted. It's just like, listen,
yeah, but
man.
Doctors have different. I mean, different doctors have different ideas, you know. So, I mean, just, you know, when you say, "Well, I'll listen to the doctor," or "I'll listen to the scientist," which ones?
Well, the ones I go to, the ones I've trusted all along the way. I'm not going to all of a sudden go, well, now you're not trustworthy.
It's good. I got to talk to you because. Not super happy with my doctor right now.
And people saying that Rolovich, Bob, he doesn't have to explain himself. You're right. He doesn't. In talking about Rolovich, I'm saying I feel like that was a missed opportunity for him. That, in my opinion, was a mistake. He did a very poor job representing his position. I think people were just left to speculate. He doesn't. You're right. He didn't have to say a word, and he basically didn't. So that's how it went for him. All right. We'll move on to the NFL. If you guys have questions for the professor, here's the text number, 421-3776, 421-ESPN. He joins us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.